Hello, and welcome back to Texas Tech Health Check from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I'm your host, Melissa Whitfield. We want you to get healthy and stay healthy with help from evidence-based advice from our physicians, healthcare providers, and researchers. Many times consumed unknowingly, illicit fentanyl is driving the recent increase in U.S. overdose deaths. Synthetic opioids like fentanyl are oftentimes mixed with other illicit drugs, such as cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin, and marijuana, leaving many users unaware that they were taking fentanyl. What does this mean for someone who is mentally ill or is taking other prescription medications? Our guest for this episode is Dr. Purvanshi Alag, assistant professor in the Department of Psychiatry and an addiction specialist. She explains the problems which could arise from someone unknowingly taking fentanyl and also why even though marijuana is legal for recreational use in some states, patients still should talk to their doctor before indulging. Dr. Alag, welcome back to our podcast.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having me here.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do here at the Health Sciences Center?
Sure. I'm basically an addiction psychiatrist, and I help patients who struggle with addiction and mental health. That's really my role. I'm an assistant professor at Department of Psychiatry, Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, Lubbock campus.
Well, again, welcome back to our podcast.
Thank you.
It seems that we don't hear that much about the opioid crisis in the mainstream media, but Narcan was recently approved for over-the-counter sales, which would make it easier for people to get and possibly save lives. In your opinion, are we still in a crisis?
So opioid crisis really arises due to overprescription of opioid pain medications. And with all this happening, we have something known as PMP, which is a prescription monitoring program, which has really been beneficial in preventing crisis. However, from the opioids, the focus has really shifted onto fentanyl. And again, remember, fentanyl is an opioid, but more so specifically, it's fentanyl more than anything else now. So fentanyl is really a potent synthetic opioid, which causes a greater threat compared to any other opioid in general. The approval of Narcan over-the-counter has definitely been a positive step to kind of combat fentanyl-related deaths and offers hope for prevention and life-saving interventions.
Why would someone take fentanyl or opioids? And what does it do to someone struggling with mental health? Do the opioids create a problem or make it worse?
Sure. So people usually take opioids like fentanyl for various reasons, including pain management, after surgery, or due to chronic pain conditions. When really it is being prescribed by professionals, and that too under supervision, it is very effective in relieving pain. However, if people start misusing it, or if it's more so for recreational purposes, including fentanyl, it really does pose a significant health risk and becomes a problem, which is known as addiction. So what really happens is opioids really go and bind to specific receptors in your brain, which are known as the mu receptors. And that really helps not only in relief of the pain, but also if it's not used in the right way, it causes euphoria in a sense of relaxation. So these pleasurable effects can be very appealing to individuals who are struggling with mental health issues like anxiety, depression, or any kind of emotional pain. Consequently, some people will turn to opioids to kind of self-medicate themselves and escape from emotional distress temporarily. Long-term, opioid use can lead to increased risk of depression, anxiety. There can be addiction issues as well, which is not only physical dependence, but there's also psychological dependence. And by that, I mean they lose their relationship, they kind of lose their house, they lose their job, and so forth. There's impaired cognition with overuse of these substances, and there's definite increased risk of overdose as well, and death.
Is it possible for someone to unintentionally take opioids? What would that do to them if they're struggling with mental health or taking other prescription medications?
Yes, very much. So, especially if they're consuming substances which are laced with opioids, which is very common nowadays, and if they're using prescription medications that contain opioids and they're not aware about it, which can also happen. If someone's struggling with mental health issues and unintentionally takes opioids, several potential outcomes may arise, which includes worsening of mental health symptoms, which is pretty significant. Like I mentioned before, there's increased risk of addiction. For instance, these patients are on medications, including psychotropic medications, which means medications that help in treating mental health. What happens is these substances can interact with those and either reduce the effectiveness or they can even cause adverse effects.
In the past few years, marijuana has become legalized in many states. What are some possible implications for mental health and substance abuse treatment?
And this has definitely been a big concern, the legalization of marijuana. So one is the increased accessibility and use, which can potentially lead to higher rates of use. There's significant impact on mental health, which leads to increase of anxiety, depression, psychotic symptoms, cognitive impairment, potential for addiction. And honestly, you know, people will say that, hey, I only use in a small amount. It's very contained. I know what I'm using. And I honestly wish that was the case. A lot of factors do play a role into that. Family history, your environment, the stressors, and people start off usually by using very little amounts. It seems great. And then they start using more because it starts to seem like it doesn't help anymore as much, which is known as tolerance. And then they eventually become dependent, which leads to addiction. And then really the legalization kind of requires to educate the people that if you're using marijuana during times when, you know, you're pregnant, you might have consequences to that. Adolescent population has really significant consequences as well if they're using marijuana in that age because their brain's developing and so forth. There's so many things ongoing. And then people who have mental health conditions, if you have genetic predisposition with mental health issues, it's only going to get worse. So a lot of concerns with the legalization aspect of it.
Patients in Texas, though, they can get medical marijuana through the state's compassionate use program. Are there medical conditions where marijuana does help, and should it always be taken with doctor's care?
Yes. I always say that if things are used in the right way, and if it is under medical supervision, just like opioids, it's great. And just like that, there are conditions, medical conditions, where marijuana can be used, and it is very effective. Some of those are like chronic pain. Patients are on it, and it does really help. Again, it should be under medical supervision. Multiple sclerosis. Patients in this condition, you know, they struggle with mobility issues. They feel like there's a lot of spasm in their body. So marijuana will help with reducing the muscle spasticity and improving the mobility, which is great for that patient population. Nausea and vomiting, particularly in patients who are undergoing chemotherapy. I mean, they're struggling really bad. So that's one of the indications as well. Certain forms of epilepsy, again, under medical supervision, marijuana can be very effective as well. What it does is really it decreases the frequency of epilepsy. Again, if you overuse it, it can actually make it worse as well. So there are pros and cons of everything. There's something known as inflammatory bowel disease, like your Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, where it can help in some reduction of inflammation as well. Remember, not all of these are FDA approved, so that's very important to know. You need to consult your doctor. There are some indications out there. There's some literature which is being worked on. It really does depend on case-by-case basis. You need to see a doctor. You need to really know yourself before you really go on the marijuana. And again, this should be under medical supervision only. And the last as well is the glaucoma, which really what it does is that in glaucoma, your eye pressure, the pressure, the intraocular pressure is really high. So if it's not being relieved by any other medication, or if you're on multiple medication and you're having side effects, they might add marijuana to that as well. And there are tons of medications. There, you know, marijuana is one of them, but that's not the only medication, or that's not the only thing that helps. Again, I cannot emphasize enough, medical supervision is very important.
There was a report that says that marijuana use is increasing, especially among adults ages 19 to 30. Does marijuana affect a young adult or teenager's growth physically or psychologically?
Indeed. Physical and psychological effects, particularly in young adults and teenagers whose brains are developing. And that's usually the age is from younghood to up until when they really turn over 25. So that whole age is very significant, and using marijuana can be a big problem for that age group. So one of the big things is the brain development. Your brain continues to develop until you're in mid-20s, and regular use of marijuana can lead to cognitive functioning issues, attention problems, memory issues, and even like some of the executive functioning and problem-solving abilities. Academic performance can be effective as well, and there are studies out there that have shown this decreased academic performance and higher risk of dropping out from schools. Besides, of course, like I've mentioned, mental health issues only get worse if someone does have it, and if someone does not have it, they can start to have it, especially if there's a genetic predisposition. Substance use disorder, the younger you are at age and you start using marijuana, there's very high likelihood that you will develop not only just marijuana addiction, but you might also develop other substance use disorders besides marijuana. And then impaired driving. You know, when people turn 16 and over, they'll start driving. If you are driving under the influence of marijuana, that can impair your judgment, your coordination, and reaction time. So it is very dangerous operating any heavy machinery or even driving under the influence, getting into accidents, and God knows what next can happen. So just in general, marijuana for this age group is the worst. That being said, I'm not saying it's safer in adulthood, but it just has worser outcomes. And as we know, smoking in general, whether it's nicotine smoking or it's marijuana smoking, they all lead to respiratory problems, including bronchitis and other respiratory issues. So there's some things that are very important to be aware about.
How can people who aren't currently receiving medical treatment or therapy relax or unwind without the use of marijuana?
So the main idea really is, you know, promoting relaxation and well-being. That's really the main idea. So mindfulness meditation can be very helpful. There are tons of apps out there now, even an app store. I mean, most of the people will have access to Wi-Fi or smartphones and whatnot. So mindfulness meditation, yoga, if you like to do it yourself or be in groups, whatever helps. Exercise, just going for walks, jogging, you know, dancing in groups, being by yourself, swimming. You know, really the goal is releasing endorphins, boosting your mood, reducing the stress is really the main thing. Being close to the nature, walks outside early in the morning, you know, usually close to 5 or 6. I mean, of course, we are in Lubbock, so it can be really hot. But still kind of, you know, finding the right time, if it's a nice weather outside, taking a walk close to the nature would be great. Journaling, sometimes expressing your own feelings if it's hard to communicate with other people, just expressing your feelings, writing it down, journaling, all of that can be very helpful as well. Engaging in hobbies. Some people will enjoy gardening, cooking, listening to music, whatever is your hobby. I mean, playing basketball, painting, coloring, whatever helps you out would be great. And then volunteering work. For some people, it's a sense of purpose and fulfillment, which is great. And if they're engaged in that, it really does distract them, helps them to relax and feel better. So I would suggest engaging in one of these, if not all, would be my recommendation.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
For sure. Please prioritize self-care, which is really important. Brushing your teeth and combing your hair and taking a shower every day is not necessarily self-care. Self-care is taking the time out for yourself. A cup of coffee is self-care. Doing hobbies, doing things purely for yourself is really self-care. Doing things to reduce stress is very important. Seeking help for mental care, for your own mental health, is extremely important. And be kind to yourself. Please don't be hard on yourself. That's one of my biggest recommendations.
Well, thank you for coming on our podcast and giving us all this great advice.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure being here. Thanks, Melissa, once again for having me over.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Texas Tech Health Check. Make sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. This information is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. always seek immediate medical advice from your physician or your healthcare provider for questions regarding your health or medical condition. Texas Tech Health Check is brought to you by Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and produced by Tierra Castillo, Susana Cisneros, Mark Hendricks, Kay Williams, Tyler White, and me, Melissa Whitfield.